The views and opinions expressed by the guests of the Inspira podcast do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of any agency of the United States government or any organization, public or private.
One, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Inspira podcast, hosted by your girl, me, Erica Mueller Chen. I'm an international development specialist with over a decade of experience leveraging the amazing power of sport to promote peace and positive social impact. My career has allowed me to live in Europe, Southern Africa, and Latin America. In 2022, I accepted an offer for my dream job in sports diplomacy. And I also became an employee family member to a U.S. diplomat, aka an EFM. This podcast is all about inspiration and career advice. Each episode, I'll interview an inspirational global changemaker working in sport for development, social impact, or the diplomatic service. This series is perfect if you have interest in breaking into one of these sectors. Or you've already landed that dream role and are keen to learn from thought leaders. Enjoy today's episode and stay inspired.
My project is going to focus on providing sports-based activities and psychosocial support through sports for migrant children in Central America, specifically like in Guatemala. So sports for development is not that big in Central America, and there's a lot of services already for migrants. I wanted to be kind of like the first one that provides this holistic support.
Welcome, friends. Today we are here with Mercedes Harrow. She is a former member of the Women's Sabre National Fencing Team of Guatemala. Her goal is to generate transformative change in and through sports to accomplish both social and economic development goals in Latin America. Mercedes is currently an active IOC young leader and works in the development sector in Jordan. Welcome, Mercedes.
Hi, Erica. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much for the invitation and for reaching out. I'm really excited to, you know, like exchange with you a little bit of thoughts on sports for development and diplomacy, which I think both topics are great.
Two of my favorite. One thing I like to do before we jump into the questions, Mercedes, is because I've named this podcast Inspira, I really enjoy sharing with the guests a reason why you inspire me. And one thing that really, really stands out to me is that you're so dedicated to serving Latin America. Even though you're not there right now, you're based in Jordan, a lot of your work and commitments have been to serve Guatemala, Peru, where you have some roots there, and just the greater region. And so I really admire that and appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to learning more about your passion.
Thank you so much. And yes, I am very much for my region. Proud Latina.
I love it. I love it. Mercedes, maybe we can kick things off a little bit further if I can ask you to share an overview of your career or your journey with sports so far and how you entered into sport for development and peace specifically. I'm really curious about that.
Of course. So I basically became involved in sports when I started work in the fencing federation in Guatemala. I kind of like had the firsthand experience of knowing what is it like to be a high level athlete in our countries and the challenges that we face. And because I had to kind of like quit my career, unfortunately, it's not like in other countries where you can like have a, you know, like a professional career on the side and also be like a very successful or professional athlete on the side. Let's say I had to like choose one of them and I had to like kind of like pick my academic career. But since then, I decided that I wanted to like work towards changing this, so to give more opportunities to the athletes and to improve the sports sector in Latin America, so that not, you know, especially in Guatemala, like other athletes wouldn't have to make this choice, you know, because once you're also your career is over, you know, there you start wondering how to transition into the work or how to get an education. And a lot of them come from very humble backgrounds. So the only way for them to overcome poverty or actually access some level of education is through sports. So this is why I kind of like became dedicated into it. And especially in Guatemala. Now I think in other countries in the region, they do have studies, especially when it comes to sports, like sports management on the side, or sports for peace building, or sports for development. It's growing a little bit, but in Guatemala, unfortunately, it wasn't a lot. Actually, when I did my thesis, when I graduated from my university, my thesis was the first one of its
Oh, wow.
Of its class, the first
Congratulations.
research.
I mean, it's
Thank
not
you.
a good like situation to be in, but I'm glad that someone like yourself made that happen.
Yeah, exactly. So I decided that I wanted to contribute to the field and bring more attention for everyone to look, you know, like sports could be related to many other things, and it can be a means to an end. And it's actually like you know, investment in human capital, as I say. So that's how I became interested in it, kind of like on the side, always trying to connect it with what I was studying or what I was doing and what I was working. And this is what eventually led me to specialize more. And then I got my master's in sports industry management from Georgetown University while I was living and working in the US. And this was also a great addition because, as I mentioned, I come from the international relations background, a little bit more like politics. So doing this master actually helped me get an insight into the industry, which was really interesting and complementary to what I was doing. You know, it's like this whole industry of sports beyond, you know, like only sports for development. I think it was very like on the economic side, let's say, but as well, very, very interesting to see how, you know, economic impacts of sport doesn't have to fight with the social aspect of sport, both of them going hand in hand. So I think that was really interesting for me and really valuable. And because I wanted to work in this field, since I didn't have much experience, I started to looking for opportunities. And that's how I ended up in Jordan. I came here to work in the sports for development sector. I started working with Right to Play. I was with them for like 8 months, more or less. Then Corona hit. And then I had to transition to work with other organizations. I have been involved working also in youth development through non-traditional means, because I also work on a project in which we're trying to educate youth through arts. Music and filmmaking. So I think also this is kind of like alternative tools, just like sports. So it was very interesting also for me to have that experience. And now I'm working more specifically in an organization that we do sports-based activities to promote peace building and conflict transformation in the Middle East, but we also have projects in different parts of the world. So overall has been a lot of like a learning experience for me. And I've been really like, you know, applying and learning and seeing the kind of benefits that, you know, sports activities have. And lastly, I also, as you mentioned, an IOC young leader. So basically through the program, we have to, you know, develop a solution either, you know, through using sports to tackle one of the problems in our local communities. In my case, my project is going to focus on providing sports-based activities and psychosocial sports or sports for migrant children in Central America, specifically like in Guatemala. As you may know, there is like a migration crisis with children in the region. Well, not with children, but, you know, affecting a lot of children, like a large portion or percentage of the people that is migrating. Our children, and they also go through the experience of being separated with their families and all of this. So sports for development is not that big in Central America, and there's a lot of services already for migrants. But I wanted to be kind of like the first one that provides this holistic support and an additional, you know, added value through sports.
Wow, that is a lot of things that you've been up to, Mercedes, and I know you're an IOC young leader, which means according to the International Olympic Committee, you are, quote, young. So to have done all of that already and to be doing all of that is really, really incredible and impressive. And I have a few quick follow-up questions because you said so many interesting things just now. And one, I'm wondering about that background or that interest you have in politics as well as economics. How have those been helpful or informative in working in the development space or the sport for development space?
I think specifically coming from being more familiarized with how sports systems work in Latin America, we are very dependent on government funding. And usually they focus on mass sports. So for everyone to be able to practice, children really don't, if they pay any fees, very low, sometimes they don't even pay fees, and then they can have the access to practice any sport, and they provide you equipment. But this has advantages and disadvantages. You know, like more people have access to practice sports, but because it's focusing on the masses, then you neglect a little bit the needs of the elite sports. And the elite sports are the one that need more investment, access to technology, is where actually people pay to watch, you know, like these very competitive leagues, and then you have this whole industry around it. So I think that one of the things that we have in America, although we focus on mass sports, we can be doing a lot more by involving other actors from the private sector to invest in sports. This will probably help professionalize and increase the level of commercialization of our sports, because a lot of Latin American countries, we don't have that many medals. The governments will save a little bit of money and dedicate it really for social programs. And then you could have also like a strong industry, you know, that provides also a lot of revenue and work, and that is strength also, you know, like when you have athletes that are professional and get paid for it, of course, they're going to get more time to training and it becomes more competitive. And then you could see this reflected at like a larger stage. So this is how I see it a little bit. I was a lot of learning for me when I was in the US, because I did my master over there, you know, like in the US, it's clearly, you know, the largest industry when it comes to sports. But then you see that they don't have this much funding when it comes to grassroots level participation, which is unfortunate. Also, if you compare it to Europe, it's a little bit more of a balance. So I think Latin America has the potential to develop both of this. But we really need to transform how we are seeing sports now, because even like the regulations and the laws within each country, they really like make it hard for other actors to participate. But if you look at countries like Argentina or Colombia, for example, they have a little bit more of laws that encourage other actors to invest in sports, so they are a little bit more competitive. Like, you know, when you look at their football clubs or soccer clubs, or you know, any other sport, basketball league, for example, like it's different.
Thanks so much for those insights. It's definitely obvious now to me that the political aspect, the economic aspect, are really connected to sport and have really allowed you to view the sector or the power of sport in a unique and actionable way. And I also wanted to rewind on the fencing topic, because Mercedes, how did you get into fencing? I only know a few fencers in my life. You're the first Guatemalan fencer I know. How did you start your fencing career?
So my parents got me into sports to start practicing, and I did like tennis for like 2 years, but I wasn't really good at it. And then in my school, we had access to practicing sports, and I tried a few over there, but me and football and basketball, we don't really get along. Like, you know, balls and me don't work together. And then I had actually went to Peru to visit my family. I used to go over in the summers and spend time with my grandparents and with my cousins over there. So of course they take you to visit the whole family, and it's the Christmas holiday, so you eat a lot. And I decided I needed to start doing some sort of sports or activity when I went back to Guatemala. So I started looking, you know, which federations to go, where to sign up, but it was easy for me to go and come back. And it was kind of like meant to be in a way, because when I found the fencing federation, it was like very easy and accessible. And I decided that I wanted to give it a try, because it was not a common sport. And I like the idea, you know, of like it being like a combat sport, but with no direct contact. And after like my first 2 months after training, I had my first competition, and there were like 20 girls competing, and I ended up in sixth place, which was actually very good for someone that had just been training for 2 months. And that kind of like hooked me, and I said, okay, I like it, this is for me, you know, I'm doing well. And by the end of that first year, I had actually made it into the national team, and that's pretty much how I got hooked into it. And I became addicted to sports after that. I mean, I still do it. I don't compete anymore, but I still do it kind of like a hobby. During Corona it was a bit hard, but I still try to like stay very active and continue with it.
And I'm wondering if fencing has ever been used to promote developmental goals. Do you know any insights there, or have you seen kind of any fencing programs for social good?
Yes and no. So they are not that many, but they are. I know there have been a few fencing programs that I read about them in the past. That was very interesting. It was fencing programs towards psychosocial support for youth, I believe. And it's interesting because, yes, fencing is a very mental sport. Like, they call it the human chess. So it really helps you build character. And again, as I mentioned, it's a combat sport, so you have to be strategic in the way you think. This kind of like example is stuck in my mind just because I never read more about it. It was something new and innovative that they were trying to do.
Nice.
So I wonder, you know, actually, what were the results of it? But then there are also other sports. I mean, there are other projects that I've heard from IOC young leaders of previous generations that they have done this just to try to spread a little bit more like fencing. For example, Paralympic fencing is actually one of the newest additions. It wasn't really popular. So I know a few young leaders, or at least one of them, that her project was about implementing or creating a Paralympic fencing team in her country.
Yeah, thanks for that. Whenever I meet someone who's has a background or an interest in what some people might consider a non-traditional sport, I always try to like tap into my sport for development brain and think, how would that work? How would that look? So I appreciate you kind of entertaining my question there. This episode features an IOC young leader. For those wondering, what does that mean? The International Olympic Committee, aka the IOC, launched the IOC Young Leaders Program in 2016 in order to empower talents to leverage the power of sport to make a positive difference in their communities. 25 leaders from across the world are selected every 2 years for a 4-year period. As of April 2023, when I'm releasing this episode, the IOC website states that with the support of seed funding from the IOC and a network of mentors, these inspiring young people have already delivered over 140 initiatives, reaching over 30,000 individual participants. As agents of Olympism, they promote the Olympic values and principles of Olympism 365 days a year, spreading the message of sport for good. Panasonic is the founding partner of the IOC Young Leaders Program, and Eunice Sports Hub is an implementing partner. Now let's get back to the episode. You've talked about it a little bit already, but I'm wondering how sport for development, how the landscape looks different in the different locations that you've worked or lived in.
There is the sport for development in the three places, but I feel like it looks a little bit different. One thing, for example, that I learned in the US is about this idea of really giving back to the community. So I feel like a lot of the sports for development initiatives or organizations that exist are really based on this volunteer experience of giving back to the community. And they are very like strong at the grassroots level. In fact, if there was no support from the community, I feel like they would not exist pretty much. There is more of like a little bit of culture of people to stay active and to participate of these programs. And I know there have been some initiatives about like using sports to, you know, like in really like marginalized communities or neighborhoods in the US, and which they bring this kind of like activities. I think the YMCA has some of them, or are the most popular one or widespread. The organization I'm working with now, Generations for Peace, they also have one in Chicago, for example, to address like gang violence a little bit. So there is and there exists. When I look into Latin America, I think they're very sporadic. There have been attempts, but not a lot. Basically, I feel like we are not mature enough to actually call it like sports for development activity, because they tend to be more structured, and we have to have, you know, like measurements, like monitoring and evaluation of these activities, and to see, you know, the pre and the post, if it's working or not working. In that sense, I feel like they are not that structured yet. So it's just like small initiatives in which they bring the children together and they work and they do activities, but there is this like lack of connecting this to like a different, you know, like a learning outcome from it, you know, sports with a purpose. In at least in my experience from Guatemala, like there is like a lot of places that they do have access to sport. Maybe the facilities or the places where they can do it are very not in the greatest condition, but there are some. But in other places, it's even more limited. But I do think that the state tries to implement this kind of programs. The problem again is like funding is just limited, so it's there for a short period of time and there's no follow-up. And because I learn about many projects, for example, that I go and I read about them and then I go back a few months or years later and then they are not there anymore. So what happened with the learning that was gathered? I know Colombia actually has plenty of examples, Argentina as well. But I think Colombia has been one of the most successful ones to kind of like invest on sports for development ideas. When I was working in Washington, D.C. in the Inter-American Development Bank, they are actually supporting a lot of initiatives that I think somehow have remained, but they are still very limited. You know, like if I compare it now coming to the Middle East, there is not a lot of participation in sports, actually. It's very limited. And for me, I was growing up, even in public schools, they did have access to sport or some sort of like physical activity. But here in Jordan, it's non-existent, pretty much. They don't have access to sports. There is not this idea of like public spaces or parks where people can go and, you know, ride their bicycles or just play together. So this is something that has been changing and people have been trying to implement more of. So there is a lot of initiatives, especially also because they work with refugees. So they do the psychosocial support through sports as well. So they have a lot of activities like are working with this kind of like communities, or because it's a great way also of promoting social cohesion. So you have like host communities and all the refugees, so Palestinians, Syrians, Iraqi, Sudani, and other minorities that are here. So there is more of a use of sports with a purpose. So I do see here that this is like very like happening as the way it should be in a way. And also because they are filling a gap of lack of access to this type of activities. So this is, you know, how kind of like I've seen it play in the three places.
Thank you for that. It's really interesting. And I know you've gathered so many insights, not only from research, but also from practice. And those are kind of, yeah, two different flows of information and types of information, as you described, you know, reading about some things and then, oh, like the program might have disappeared. Like what happened? Mercedes, I know you've talked about it a little bit already in terms of your IOC Young Leaders Project and serving migrants in Guatemala through sport. Could you expand on that a little bit more and describe to the audience what problem you're trying to solve and how sport is allowing you to solve it?
Based on my experience living in the Middle East and seeing the projects that they are implementing with refugees and displaced population here in Jordan, I decided, why not take this experience and knowledge that I have now and try to, you know, implement it back in the region with migrant children and displaced people now that are in Central America, you know. I decided to kind of like look into it, especially because there is no sports program that is serving this community. Most of it is focusing on employability and prevention of migration. And of course, other kind of like more immediate humanitarian relief services for people that are being, returned into Central America. Because there is like, Guatemala is now like a transit country. I don't know if you heard about the caravans of people that are, you know, going from Honduras or El Salvador and then they're crossing by land through Guatemala and then to Mexico. And like this, there's other people also from different countries in South America, like Ecuador, Venezuelans. There are a lot that also cross like this. And because Guatemala signed with the U.S. a third safe country in which people should apply for, I think, like some sort of like asylum or whatever, like they have to apply in Guatemala before they can go into the U.S. or Mexico. A lot of people is being sent back here regardless of their nationality. So a lot of them are kind of like stranded for a while before they can actually go back, or because they're coming from like Ecuador or Venezuela, you know, like that's really, really far from them and they have no means to go back. They kind of like are stranded there, or they come from like other communities nearby, mostly from El Salvador or Honduras or in Guatemala itself. Reading about most of them being like youth or children that are migrating, and some of them have gone through the experience of crossing illegally and then being sent back. Then they have been, you know, the things that they have seen or lived through this path that it's not easy, or also going through family separation, I think is one of the big things. So I decided that I wanted through sports activities, you know, kind of like provide just this relief for them, like the psychosocial support. you know, just to give them a time to kind of like relieve from all of this, and also to work a little bit on social cohesion, because many of them come from different indigenous communities in Guatemala, and then they end up all together, you know, mixing with other children. I thought it would be like really impactful, you know, to bring those lessons learned that I've seen here with Syrians, mostly, into like this migrant youth that we have. But also because by doing my research, I found out actually that a lot of the projects that are working on employability, and not so much research, but also consultations with people that are working with migrants over there, is that the employability programs are failing to get the number of women that they need into participating on these programs. And usually this is because women are either like at the home and they don't have someone that cares of their children, or it's really hard for them to leave the children alone, or they don't really want to get, you know, like participate in this kind of activities. It's still this idea, you know, like the woman has to be in the home and serve in the home. So they're really not being able to get all the women that they want to into benefiting of this kind of like employability, entrepreneurship classes they're giving. It's mostly for men. So by offering these activities in parallel to some of these other workshops that are happening, it will kind of like invite women to actually try to participate, you know, and leave their children in the activities, knowing that they're in a safe place, that they are learning something and they're engaging in like a really good activity for them. Then they can go and participate of this class. I have already been in contact with one organization in Guatemala that is going to like support me and help me out, because I am in the distance a little bit. So it's going to be hard for me, you know, to implement it, but I do hope I get to visit, you know, and see it, how it's happening in the field. But hopefully next year I will do my pilot. So right now I'm just in the process of designing the activities, kind of like the learning outcomes of each session and designing the sessions and finding the coaches that are going to implement this project. Because also I want it to be a little bit of capacity building for older youth that can actually implement this sports activities also in their own communities. So I'm just in the whole process of designing this and getting ready for the pilot next year.
Oh, I'm going to have to touch base with you next year to find out what it's been like, that implementation phase. And Mercedes, are there any challenges that you've faced or that you anticipate facing in terms of launching the pilot?
Well, I think the psychosocial support is one of the ones that worries me a little bit, just because it's a very sensitive topic and you do really need to have someone that can provide the support that these children need, especially knowing the kind of experiences that they might have, or if they are separated from their families, you know, if maybe they are in the care of an older woman, like their grandmothers or a close relative, for example, or if they have lost someone on the way, you know, like those kind of things. Just how to make sure that you know, like there will not be unintended negative consequences in the implementation of the program. Although my target is not women, I really hope that it works, you know, into getting women into participating in the workshops, for example, inviting them through their children to go. And I think the sustainability of it, just because, as you know, the project is focusing on social businesses, but like finding this business strategy is not as easy. So this is something I'm trying to figure out, but based on my work experience in fundraising and all of this, I'm like, okay, I will manage. I will get there sometime. So I'm just worrying about the design right now, but the sustainability in the longer term, so that if it works out, it can actually continue. Because I also want it to be not in the city, because there is a lot of already projects close to the city, and I do want to take it to other areas, and especially, you know, near the borders to Mexico, so that the people that is actually there can benefit from it.
I'd love to ask you how you've navigated your career opportunity specifically, because I've been privileged to have a look at your resume and your LinkedIn, and you have some really big name organizations, whether that's in development or sport for development. So Inter-American Development Bank, IDB in Washington, D.C., and also Right to Play and Generations for Peace, which you've been involved with both in Jordan. Can you share whatever you're comfortable sharing about how you have found paid opportunities with those organizations or gone about your career navigation to find paid work in the sector, which can, to be honest, can be a challenge?
Yes. And then, so I think one of the things that made the difference for me, and I have to be very honest about this, is just because when I was studying in Guatemala, we saw like even the Organization of American States, which is kind of the organization that opened the doors for me into the labor market, let's say in the US. For us, it's, I don't know if you're familiarized with the OAS, but it is like the regional UN for the Americas. It's the oldest international organization that exists, even older than the UN. So it seems so unattainable and something that we couldn't like really apply for and go. But when I did I did an exchange semester in the US. While I was studying there, I decided, okay, I'm studying politics and I'm in the international capital of the world, like the political capital of the world. So let me take advantage of it and look for something to do. And they suggested I apply. They gave me this list to organizations to apply to. And I said, the OAS, are you sure I can apply here? And they actually said, yes, why not? You know, they had no clue. You know, a lot of Americans, because for them it's very little. The organization is very little, but for us in Latin America, we see it like, wow. So she said, yeah, sure. But I don't know what it is, but go for it, you know? And they actually called me and I did an internship. This was an unpaid opportunity, but because I was there, I was able to manage and do it. And then there was an opening and then they called me. So it was a little bit of luck, I guess, but something that I have learned through my career is that you have to be prepared for when the opportunity comes. You know, even though this initial work that I did, even in the Inter-American Development Bank, I took the opportunity to learn from the programs that they were doing that were related to sports. The prior president, Luis Alberto Moreno, he's actually from Colombia. And I think he had a lot of, you know, believed in the power of sports a lot. So he was really trying to bring this into the organization, for example. So I had those learnings to see from the organization that the work was doing, even though I wasn't really involved in it. And also my boss, he loves, you know, sports and he was very supportive with me. So he tried to involve me in kind of like those activities or would allow me to participate in those activities. So I had to like do my work on the side, but always focused on getting myself ready into the sports for development field, you know, through my studies and connecting them back to my region. So it was like a parallel effort, but I had to step in through a non-paid opportunity eventually and then just try to make the best out of it. But I do think that if you really try a lot, like I feel like if I hadn't been for example, in Jordan or the experience that I had, I feel like it really helped me to have a successful application in for the IOC youth leaders. And I think just even now that I'm here in Jordan, I feel like I worked like the equivalent of like 8 years altogether, you know, like I had consultancies and work on the side and taking internships. I also was briefly working with the UNESCO office in Paris for like the sports section actually. So it was also like free, but it was a high level like learning experience for me. But I think making the best out of every opportunity that you find and really making sure that your work, you know, speaks for itself is really helpful, but always be prepared for when the opportunity comes, you can take it.
That's really, really helpful advice. Some of the things that I want to pull out from what you said is one, having persistence, just really going at it, even if you don't get what you want or what you're looking for in a couple of months, just keeping at it. Two, that work ethic, right? You said let your work speak for itself. So once you get an opportunity, whether it's paid or unpaid, you have to prove your value. And third, finally, you might have to start out unpaid. And maybe you could speak just briefly to what Generations for Peace is and your day-to-day activities, if you have a typical day or a typical week there.
Generations for Peace is a peace building organization. They are founded by Prince Faisal, peace building organization. They are based in Jordan, but they have programs all over 52 different countries. And they do peace building with youth to increase civic engagement and to tackle or well not tackle but address conflict transformation, and they do it basically through sports-based or activities. That's how initially they started, and then they added more vehicles for peace, as they call them, as arts, empowerment, advocacy, They are also doing some media for peace programs. The senior grant proposal officer, which I think is very nice because coming from a protocol background in the other organizations, which was kind of like more behind the scenes of all this networking, now I'm kind of like on the other side, participating of the networking and trying to find opportunities, you know, for the organization. But also it's related a lot to research because you have to, you know the context in the country, know, you know, the donor or the organization that you want to work with and partner and really try to create very compelling narrative proposals in order to secure funding. So I think it just very like nicely how, you know, these experiences that I've had come together. And then specifically because it's about promoting the use of sports for social development.
I know we've talked about a lot of different things. Is there anything that we've left out that you wanted to share?
Actually, there's one, and it comes to the specific fact of like women in sports, because there is not that many, like we always talk about like this gender equality issue, like there is an underrepresentation of women, there is a glass ceiling, and we don't see women in management positions. And then in some countries, there is a little bit more of progress than in others. But specifically looking at the sports for development sector, I have noticed that this is happening in every single place. You know, it's not a problem that is only for, like, let's say, Latin America or for the Middle East. Because when I was studying in the U.S., we also had the same issue. We were talking about lack of representation of women in management positions. So for me, I think now being in the three, you know, kind of like being able to compare the three different contexts, I think women still looking specifically at the sports for development sector or sports sector in general, I think there is still a lot of opportunities for women because we are underrepresented. So I think we really need to continue like trying to bring more women to work in the sports sector, either from, you know, like the industry itself or in the sports for development sector. I really think that we need to like push more for this kind of thing. And especially, and I mentioned this when we were in the youth summit, connecting with other women from different, you know, parts of the world, I think is very important for us to, you know, learn from each other and support each other so that we can like, you know, kind of like break the glass ceiling within the sports sector when it comes to like women representation.
Amen. Amen. I'm with you. Anything I can do to support you, Mercedes, I'm with you because you're doing some really incredible work.
Now that we know more about our guest's career journey, the rest of our conversation will allow us to have some fun and get to know our guest on a personal level through some rapid-fire questions. We'll then start to wrap up with pointed questions focused on advice and how our listeners can transform interest into action. Enjoy the rest of the conversation.
Mercedes, what makes a good fencer?
I think probably discipline.
What's your favorite food?
My favorite food, actually, it's a Peruvian dish. Mm-hmm. Peruvian cuisine is the best for me. And it's called ají de gallina. Basically, like a shredded chicken with like a yellow sauce and white rice. And it has potatoes too.
If you were to have a hypothetical dinner party, who would those guests be?
One of them, I think, would be the president of the IOC, Thomas Bach. I think he's very interesting. Right now, when we had a session with him in the summit, listening to his life stories, how he got involved in sports and just his anecdotes and the stuff that he has, you know, motivated him through his work and hard decisions he had to make, I think that would be very interesting.
Name one favorite part of culture in Guatemala, Peru, and Jordan.
A part of culture. I think that, I mean, they are very, very similar. One of the things that I've been obsessed about here in Jordan is actually the dabke, which is like the traditional dance here. You should look up some videos. They're very nice. So I started taking like learning how to do dabke. I never took like salsa lessons in my life, but I'm learning dabke. So I like the music, and in this particular than from Peru. I think the food, definitely, like the food is the biggest piece of me that I would take. And then from Guatemala, I don't know if this would be like a part of culture, but like working with people from different nationalities, I really think that like Guatemalans are very hard workers and very humble. Like they more than any other people, I don't know, I feel like they are really hard workers. Like
I just looked up Dabka Dance Jordan, so I see a few previews to what the dance could look like. So yeah that's that looks like fun. What's your best sports memory?
My best sports memory, I think it's just there's not like a specific moment, but just the thing I miss the most and that I enjoyed, it was just like whenever you do a touch and you scream and you yell and you feel that adrenaline, like, oh my God, that touch. Especially because I used to like scream, like yell a lot after I get a touch, like just, you know, that release of energy that you get. I it's so powerful. Like I really miss it. I think that was my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, fencing. When we would have softball practice in college, sometimes we would see the fencers when we were practicing indoors, and we would always watch and be just like captivated by the different strategic moves. And I've seen some films as well, maybe some documentaries. I think it was actually the one around the Paralympics or like Rise of the Phoenix. I think one of them was around Paralympic fencing, perhaps. But just the emotion that you have to contain and then you can let it out. It's just like so tense. You know, and so what you said kind of reminded me of that.
yes I love it, and I'm glad that you find it interesting. A lot of people find it boring. It's because if you don't understand what is happening and it's a lot of rules that you have to know, a lot of people don't enjoy it. But once you know the rules, you're kind of like, oh my god what happened, you know.
Mercedes, do you have any advice for someone interested in pursuing a career in sport for development and peace?
Yes, I think participating in many of the different like events that there are a lot of like like online, for example, that you can now participate on and see these forums and try to connect with the people in networking a little bit with these organizations, because this is a very like exclusive group, but not exclusive in, you know, like an excluding way, but just to say like a very rich group of people that are very focused on this.
You mentioned networking is really important. Do you have any strategic networking advice?
I think you really need to know like your intention and what you want to achieve. Like if you're, you know, networking without a purpose, then it's not going to be efficient. So you really need to know what you want to get or what you need, you know, in order to help your purpose. Because there could be like these really interesting people that you can meet and talk to. But if you have no clue of what you want, then it's not going to lead anywhere anyway.
You mentioned something at the beginning of the interview about alternative methods or alternative tools to promoting peace and education, such as art and music. What have you learned about the power of alternative peace building or educational mechanisms and how they can be used positively in society? Are there any insights there?
I think the reason why these tools are very successful is because you don't really need to speak the same language. And this is something that everyone can relate to. And this is where the success is. For example, when I came to Jordan, I don't speak Arabic, but I was going to the trainings and the coach will try to speak a little bit of English, but I knew what I was doing because of the sport, or I will just see someone else doing it if I didn't understand the questions, and then we'll get to it. You know, the same way of art, the same way of you're listening to music, you just need to understand the rhythm in your dancing or your painting. And I think this kind of things is just because of that shared, you know, passion that you can find in them without having to talk to anyone is what makes them very valuable.
Those unifiers, right? It brings people together. Who are some of the big name organizations that you think people should familiarize themselves with if they want to break into the sport for development space?
I think it really depends on your country or your location. But I would say that Sport and Dev, the platform, is definitely kind of like the Bible, the go-to place for anyone that is just trying to get some information, like for the beginning to get more ideas, or, you know, like to kind of like kickstart it, and then go into something more specific. If you're studying, for example, also there is the, or if you're looking to the academics, I think the Köln Sports University in Germany, it's also one of like the go-to places for people that is looking to be in this field. They also have some learning lab as well, with GIZ together with them, you know, small courses that you can take. Those are also very interesting and very useful. And then I think it would really depend on where you're located. But the IOC as well, you know, through their IOC and Leaders program, that's also another go-to resource.
Mercedes, how can our audience support you or your work moving forward?
For me, connecting with the people that is interesting in Latin America, or that they have an interesting activity or project that is happening in Latin America related to sports, I really want to hear about it. I want to like create synergies, connect, see how we can support each other and make this movement grow or strengthen itself. I think that's the best way in which they can support. So please feel free to reach out. And also, if there is anything in which I can add value to, you know, going into LinkedIn or Instagram, following my Instagram, I'm trying to position myself better. I don't have that many followers. Also, this time, one like would help.
Yes, we got you. And Mercedes, my final question is, who or what inspires you? And I welcome you to answer in Spanish and then give us a little bit of English or vice versa.
Even though you may call me a fool or any other thing, I believe that anything is possible. So since I read this quote, it really stuck with me throughout the whole place. In Guatemala, sports development wasn't a thing. So I don't care if you think of me as fool or naive, but I do believe in it and I do want to work on it. And if you really persist on it, you know, anything is possible. Mi objetivo realmente es fortalecer el rol del deporte para el desarrollo económico y social, para incrementar la competitividad de la industria deportiva en América Latina y el Caribe. So that's actually my goal, to enhance the role of sports for social and economic development to increase the competitiveness of the sports industry in Latin America and the Caribbean.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Inspira podcast with Erica Mueller Chen. I really hope you enjoyed the episode and found it useful. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. Until next time, stay inspired.